some peace, my love, in the quiet of your arms. A little time out of reality, where love might find no harm. But instead I found myself inside a circle of defeat, where no one lives but you, my love, and spirits cannot meet.
You are listening to CFRO Community Radio Station on 102.7 FM. The upcoming show, Conscious Living Radio, is a program that explores frontiers of consciousness, spirituality, personal growth, emerging paradigms in psychology, health, science, and innovative philosophies that reflect commitment to the advancement of individual, social, and global transformation.
That might guide me to your truth, so that when the sadness owns your eyes, I might help to break you loose. But the other world will paralyze and then activate your pain. Have you believed in that wound untouched might never hurt again? So they feel and simmer endlessly behind your gentle lips. I can see it in your eyes and I can taste it in your kiss. Yes, I can taste it in your kiss.
You're listening to Co-op Radio Station 102.7 FM. This is Andrew Resmer, Conscious Living Radio. Tonight we're going to be talking about vanishing of the bees. And our guest is Miriam Henine. She has more than 15 years of experience working as an investigative journalist, documentary and television producer, and professional researcher. Her credits include producing documentaries for BBC, Discovery, Robert Greenfield, and Morgan Spurlock. As a journalist, she has written for publications such as the Los Angeles Times, Science and Spirit magazine, and the Cairo Times. Following a near-death experience several years ago, Miriam delved into science of nutrition and alternative ways of healing. She also became more conscious about the environment and went to produce a piece on the Exxon Valdez oil spill for Robert Greenwald and Sierra Club. She has worked developing numerous documentaries on topics ranging from creationism to family annihilators. Her curiosity and tenacity energizes her work as a documentarian. Currently, she has become enchanted by and developed to making of the film about the vanishing of the bees. Welcome in our studio.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit more. Why did you decide to devote your passion, energy, and creativity to research and produce this movie, or co-produce this movie about bees?
Well, I was looking for a project to give back, something that was served a greater purpose than me, and I started doing a little bit of research into the colony collapse disorder, which is the phenomenon of the bees disappearing, and that was in April 2007. And one of the symptoms which I really felt for was the fact that the bees are abandoning the brood and the queen, and I saw that as a parallel to us abandoning Mother Earth. And I was becoming more and more conscious of the environmental havoc that we're causing to the planet. I also was taken by the fact that the honeybees are a sister society, so in a hive of, let's say, 50,000, most of them are female, and I consider myself to be a sister at heart. And then a couple of days after doing my research, bees literally started flying into my life, and I feel like I am an ambassador for the honeybees, and I'm in service to them.
Mm. For those listeners who don't know the issue about disappearance of bees and hives dying off, can you tell a little bit more what happened in 2007?
In 2007, a beekeeper by the name of David Hackenberg, who's become kind of the poster child for this phenomenon called colony collapse disorder, started complaining loudly about disappearing hives. In a very short amount of time, there would be, he'd open the hive and there would be virtually no bees left, which typically if there's a die-off of some sort, you find the corpses by the hive.
Mm-hmm.
So it soon became known that this phenomenon was happening all over America, and in fact it's happened in other parts of the world. Like 10 years prior to that, in the mid-90s, it was happening in France, and honeybees are insects that we should all care about because, it's good to care about nature, but also because they pollinate one in every three bites of the food we eat, so all fruits and vegetables and nuts. And there's still so many people who don't understand. They think it's just for the honey that we should care, but it's, you know, if you want to eat avocados to zucchinis, even they pollinate alfalfa and which also is used to feed the cows, so it mm-hmm. indirectly affects our cattle as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they're super important, and they're also kind of the modern day canary in the coal mine.
Mm-hmm. So from 2007 up till now, that's 4 years of this situation. How many bees are we talking about?
Well, Every year, the United States alone loses about, I'd say, 32 to 36%. When you say right now, I don't have the figures on. I mean, millions and millions and millions of honeybees.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that when you have a hive, what happens is that you can split it in two. And then you put an artificially inseminated queen. So there's these kind of factory farms that raise queens, and then you can make up your numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Some would argue that putting these artificially inseminated queens is part of the problem because the bees themselves obviously have an intelligence and a way of doing things, and they don't, there's a lot of supersedure, which means they kick the queen out. So it's almost as though they don't recognize this temporary queen.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes this vicious circle. Back in years ago, beekeepers would be advised to requeen, which is the term, maybe every couple of years. And now it's become epidemic. I mean, they requeen several times a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so the queens themselves are not lasting as long. And typically a queen can live up to 5 years, which is a huge amount of time for an insect. If you compare it to the worker bee, she lives about 6 weeks
mm-hmm.
in the summer and then 6 months because she hibernates in the winter. So that's like 6 months compared to 5 years is huge.
Mm-hmm. So 1/3 of bees
yes.
disappear every year for last 4 years. And we're using some technology that is temporarily fixing the problem. But as you say, this technology may be adding to the problem. How do we know right now why this is happening in the first place? Same technology has been used before. What has changed?
When you say technology, what are you referring to?
To inseminating this fake queen, let's say.
Yeah, yes. Splitting hives is something that's been done. It's kind of a double-edged sword,
mm-hmm.
if you will. So are you asking why are they dying?
Yeah, what has happened in 2007 that created the situation?
It's a very complex problem. And I would say that a lot of different things are contributing and synergizing to cause the bee die-offs. But from our research, what we found after working on this project for 4 years is that we believe that at the root are these new types of pesticides. They're called systemic pesticides. So back in the day, organophosphates would be sprayed upon the leaves, and if there was some type of pesticide interaction, you, like I said, you'd see the hives dead on the ground. But now these systemic pesticides are insidious in the sense that they're enrobed in the seed, and then they uptake into the root and into the plant system. So the plant itself carries the pesticides. So the theory is that the bees will take the pollen and the nectar and put it in their stores, and so it doesn't affect the adult generation, it affects the subsequent generations that will go into the stores and for winter, and then you see them dying off. There, these pesticides have neurotoxins and affect the navigational capabilities of a honeybee, and our film explores all of that. Of course, there's this weakens your immune system, their immune system, and when your immune system is compromised, then the typical flu that you can fight off, you can't. And then it's kind of like, I like to use the analogy of AIDS, that if someone with AIDS dies of pneumonia, it seems that the pneumonia took them down, but that's not what the root of the problem was.
So that would explain also this navigational capacity of the bee is affected. That explains why scientists can't really find millions of dead bees, because they fly away and they don't come back.
Yeah, a honeybee cannot survive without her hive for more than 24 hours. So if all, in the morning they all go to work and they're all pollinating the crops, and also we're talking about monoculture, so everything looks the same, and it would be easy to get lost. This bee kind of has like Alzheimer's and doesn't find her way back. And also it's hard to find the corpses, because they just biodegrade into the ground. It is, that aspect is still kind of a mystery, maybe they're all flying to the fifth dimension or Venus,
And you have been involved in raising consciousness on that issue through the movie, through the research. How is that movement affecting the communities that have been exposed to this movie?
Well, we get emails every day about people who have started taking up, who are beekeeping, who have planted a garden, who have shown the movie to their children. There's a line in the film from one of the people we interviewed that says that we should work towards a future where not one beekeeper has 60,000 hives, but 60,000 people each have a hive. So we have about 20,000 people on our Facebook page, and there's a hive community, that's a hive consciousness that's building, and a lot of positivity, as we've seen increase in farmers markets, and it's good for people to learn. A lot of people don't realize that industrialization has also penetrated the beekeeping industry. You have this kind of idea of a beekeeper in the field by himself, kind of and it's not true. These guys drive trucks around the country, going from crop to crop to crop. And I mean, I certainly didn't know 4 years ago the magnitude of the beekeeping industry.
The fact that there's going to be 60,000 people creating their own hives in their own gardens is not going to change the fact that the pesticides are still being used, this new type of pesticides are still going to be used, and the bees may still be disappearing. How do we counter that?
Well, I think, change happens in small baby steps. The number one thing is education. And once, you know, like during the making of this film, the chemical company in question started, and the EPA in America, the Environmental Protection Agency, started meeting with beekeepers. So that was a first. And at first, the beekeepers were naively enthusiastic. And, you know, it turns out that more than anything, it was kind of like a stall tactic. But nonetheless, they've had to address it, and I think as there's more pressure, there's more petitions going on, there's groups like the NRDC, PANA, which is the North American anti-pesticide movement, and Beyond Pesticides, which is another movement. I don't know the kind of equivalent in Canada, but PANA is all North America. These different groups, NGOs, have also come together and are fighting and petition. So, you know, the awareness is increasing. And certainly if we're not as dependent on, if we eat organic, we drive demand up and then the prices will go down so that organic can be more affordable. I saw a poster the other day that said, you know, it had a picture of someone getting fast food or something, and it said dinner in just a few minutes, health issues in just a few years. And it's like, you might not want to spend that money on food, but in my opinion, food is everything. I mean, just we've lost that sacred connection between this food that we put into our system that fuels us, and the energy that goes into making the food, and what goes into it's like, it's not enough to worry about, oh, did you get your serving of vegetables today? It's like, do my fruits and vegetables, are they ridden with pesticides and poisons? So I think the bees are just this messenger, and they're kind of ingrained in our psyche. They're such ancient creatures.
You tell us a little bit more about how far do we know our co-relation with bees?
Well, in ancient Egypt, there were beekeeping back then. They used honey to entomb the mummies. Honey is the only thing out there that it doesn't go bad. It preserves. It is medicinal. Definitely in ancient Egypt, beekeeping was around. And then when you go through Greek history, Roman history, there's bee goddesses, and there's mentions of bees throughout cultures as these they're associated with being messengers. Mm-hmm. They're associated with love. Mm-hmm. They have these magical properties.
And what is your take on us as a humanity in taking this amazing creature and taking the products of their labor? And I don't know the numbers, so I've read it somewhere that it takes thousands of trips back and forth from hive to different plants and to produce a minuscule amount of honey.
A honeybee in her 6 weeks of life will produce a quarter of a teaspoon of honey.
So it's miles of flying back and forth, very tedious work. And obviously they don't produce honey for us. They are producing for a different purpose, and we are in some way abusing it, enslaving them to our own advantage. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I call them, you know, the indentured slaves in a sense. Well, you know, there's some vegans that don't eat honey, and I do eat honey. I believe that if you're buying honey from a local beekeeper that uses organic practices and who definitely makes sure that first and foremost the bees have enough honey for themselves, and if there is a surplus, they will take. And so I think if the manner in which it's harvested, if it's done with reverence, then I personally think it's okay. It depends, but a lot of the honey that is mixed in with in baking goods or honey, just cheap honey, is mixed in with crap, whether it's corn syrup or it's, you know, it's what it's indicative of so many things, and that we don't, do we really think about what we're putting in our system or how it got there to the shelf or what it took to make that product? If we're just, it's about raising the consciousness, everything that we do, to be mindful. And of course, we're not perfect and we're all trying. Hopefully we're all trying. I'm certainly not perfect by any means, but it's about just having a respect for Mother Nature.
Mm-hmm. Before we come back to respect and how that would look like, because I'd like at the end of our conversation to give our listeners very specific, tangible steps that each of us can take to help, help the bees, help ourselves, help our environment and our world. I don't want to be alarmist, but I think we need to bring those issues to the front of our awareness. What could happen if those bees continue disappearing in those numbers, one third of bees per year?
Well, in America, you know, we're, and I'm Canadian, by the way, but in America, it seems like there's more and more dependence on importation of food. So if, and the country is really thrives on wheat and corn and wind pollinated crops. So, you know, we address in our movie, like, who would feed America? What would it look like? Would it, you'd have to wait for the ship to come in, and then if the ship comes in, you know, if you go to the grocery store and you see there's like produce from Chile or Mexico or whatever, a lot of the pesticides, the poisons that are illegal in America are not illegal in other countries. And then so the fruits and vegetables are doused with those poisons and then brought right back into the country. It's completely retarded. So we would look at just a life without sweetness. I mean, put the fruits and the vegetables and the nuts aside, all the beautiful flowers and the trees and the sweetness. A world without bees is a world that's not right. Something's amiss.
I think it's more than that. I don't think we can survive as a species without fruits and veggies, because that's where 90% of nutrients and vitamins come from.
Yeah, I'm trying not to be too alarmist either. But yes, we wouldn't survive. But there's a lot of people who are surviving eating crap. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're eating empty calories and they're, you know, in poor communities. I mean, some would just be a very malnourished community, malnourished in so many ways, not just physically malnourished. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, yeah, I don't want to be too alarmist.
Yeah, neither do I, but I think we can't be too soft on this either. I see this as an enormous situation with insect that has been working for us for thousands of years, disappearing. And we, with our most advanced technology, scientists, thousands of people around the world trying to figure it out, we don't really have the full answers. And as you said before, it is a complicated issue. Pesticides are the most likely, but there are frequencies with we're using more broader frequencies. We're getting into infrared frequencies that have not been used before, very low frequencies, high frequencies. The power of those transmitters are much more. Temperature is changing around the globe. There is a series of different changes that are happening on the globe that affect different species or, in a different way. And I think bees are just, you know, maybe one example of series of changes that are happening.
I think everything across the board is collapsing. The monetary system, the health care system, everything's... Because these are archaic systems. These are like... The matrix has got to go. And then the bees are just here to tell us to wake up.
And if... So let's go back to solutions. What would be the solution? What should we advise our listeners to do?
So just to our film is a full-length feature, and it's narrated by Oscar-nominated actress Ellen Page, and it focuses on solutions. We end the film with tangible ways that we can make a difference. Number one, we believe that education, we're trying to, we're cutting a 30-minute version and putting together a study guide so that we can bring this to school. So we're raising money for that, for a school tour in the fall. And so number one is education.
If it's education, what do we educate ourselves about? We know the problem.
This is for people who don't. I mean, there's people who, are kids to raise children that are not afraid of bees. There's many kids that somehow they've absorbed this fear, and they're just afraid. Whereas if you don't emanate fear, the bees. A bee doesn't want to sting you. She loses her life. It's not in her best interest. And then, of course, there's getting rid of the pesticides in your, just underneath your kitchen cabinet or in your shed. Or we use like 1 billion pounds of pesticides. That's just agriculture, not to mention the personal use. These are all poisons that just stay in the earth, that their metabolites are sometimes even more toxic. When they synergize, they become, if two poisons are put together, they synergize. So just being mindful, not using in your garden poisons, supporting your local farmer, going to farmers markets, just developing some type of connection with your food. Those are some of the ways.
So you're reducing chemicals in at home, eating organic, that automatically forces industry not to use chemicals, reducing environmental impact of our life, eating healthy and living healthy. Can you tell us a little bit more about, we have 2 minutes left,
yes,
about your movies. You came to Vancouver with and you're offering a few screenings.
Yes, there's a screening that's taking place now in Richmond, and then tomorrow there's one at Eternal Abundance at 8 o'clock. You can also, which is downtown Vancouver, you can also go to vanishingbees.com and purchase the film there. We have a grassroots campaign called Be the Change, so we encourage concerned citizens, as well as NGO groups, environmental groups, beekeeping groups, gardening communities, to license the film, and you can use the film as a tool to raise funds and or awareness for your own group. So we see this as a movement and not just a movie. So it's also available on iTunes and Netflix.
And tomorrow, when you're going to be screening and answering questions at Eternal Abundance on Commercial, 1025 Commercial at 8 o'clock, can people who attend the screening buy the copy for themselves as well?
Yes, I will be selling copies of the film for only $15. And then I encourage them to give it to someone as a gift and...
Spread this education.
Spread the buzz, as I like to say.
So today it's Richmond. Do you know, for those listeners who want to jump into a car right now and get there, it's too late? Or?
Well, it started at 5:45.
Okay, so it's too late for today. So,
but I will be going to do a Q&A. It's at the Spring Coffee.
Okay, and tomorrow, 8 o'clock, come earlier. It's actually an organic vegan restaurant that is using only organic ingredients on 1025 Commercial. It's called Eternal Abundance, and If you want to eat and try something, come a little bit earlier, because at 8 o'clock we are starting the screening. It's only $8 and it includes actually a healthy snack. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
See you tomorrow.
They say that I'm a sinner, and you know that I'm no saint. But when it comes to loving you, I'll tell you that I ain't afraid to walk the line. That brings me back to you. And I will walk with you for until we see it through.
Well, you know that I'm no movie star. Sure, I'd never learn the lines. But when it comes to loving you, I tell you I'll do fine behind the scenes, my love. We can dance the night away. And I will dance with you forever until my dying day.
Well, grander things like diamond rings we never could afford, but maybe dreaming makes them what they are. Well, I was a sparkle in your eye
that will never die. This love has served us well, my friend, save a time or two. But when it came to heading home, I walked right back to you without a doubt, my love. Like a moth into a flame. And if I had a chance to change things, sure I'd do the same again. Yes, I would walk with you forever. I wouldn't change a thing.